Numbers and Tech Podcast is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard. Numbers and Tech Podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications expert and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom-branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide-format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That's 208-467-7468. Hi, I'm Melissa, and this is the Numbers and Tech Podcast. Every entrepreneur has a story. Listen to women discuss the financial side of their business, both the challenges and successes. Let's grab life by the bottom line. Welcome, everyone. This is Melissa Shane with the Numbers and Tech Podcast. Today's guest is Thea Koenig, and she is a professional photographer, storyteller, and adventure seeker. I think that's my favorite part. And just a caveat, Thea and I have known each other for a few years now, so this is going to be a fun, comfortable chat. And before we get going, Thea, I'm going to read something that you wrote on your website, see if you remember.
Okay.
Thea describes herself as a girl with camera seeks adventure to capture quirky, beautiful images around the globe, have a laugh with the locals, and live to tell about it. So welcome, Thea.
Thank you.
So first we're going to chat about being a photographer, but also you have lots of wonderful, fun, amazing stories from all around the globe, and I think that's what we want to hear even more about. But when did you first know you wanted to be a photographer?
Actually, in third grade, my mom had a camera, and then she won another camera in some Valentine's, you know, camera store giveaway or whatever. So I got her old one, and I was allowed black and white film until I could prove myself worthy for color. But it was never allowed in my family as a profession. I had to pick one of the top five professions listed in U.S. News and World Report. So my options were doctor, lawyer, computer programmer, I think stockbroker, yeah, and something else. But like, I didn't want to be
accountant.
Yeah. I didn't want to be a doctor because I didn't want to like somebody tell me what to wear every day, and I didn't want to be a stockbroker because I didn't want to wake up that early. and it wasn't until I realized when I was maybe like 19 or 20 or 21, where it was like, wait a minute, this is my life. I can choose whatever I want to be. And then I set forth to become a photographer. My parents were like, only five people in the world can actually like follow their dream, and you're crazy to think you'd be one of them. And then I just realized, you know what? I want to die trying.
So did you go to school after high school to be a photographer?
Yeah, my parents actually wanted me to go to Stanford. But I was an exchange student in New Zealand and didn't send in my application in time. So, and maybe that was subconsciously because I was really forced to be an overachiever. And I was almost like burnt out by the time I got out of high school. And I wanted to go to photography school, and my parents weren't letting me. But it was the same price as Stanford. And I pulled out my ACE card and I said, well, I'm going anyway. You're either with her or against me, and I'll sell cocaine or whatever I have to do to to go to school. So they ended up, like, helping me in the end.
And where did you go to photography school?
Brooks Institute of Photography. It's in Santa Barbara, and it's one of the – it's considered one of the – well, it was considered one of the top three photography schools in the nation. There's also Pasadena Art Center for Art and Design. Is that Pasadena, something like that, and RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology in New York. And there was Brooks. And Brooks now has kind of gone through some ups and downs, and it's kind of in a down now. So, and I've received an education for film. I mean, I know a lot about optics and film emulsions and stuff like that. So I kind of had to like learn all over again when everything turned to digital.
Mm. So as soon as you finished at Brooks, did you immediately dive into photography work? Like, did your career path allow you to go into that, or did you do odd jobs first?
Well, everybody was like headed to LA or New York, and it was 1991 and it was a recession. So the only job offer I got was this photographer in Boise, Idaho, had an opening. And so I got the job as an intern.
So you came from California to Boise.
Put the cat in the car. Or no, the van at the time. So his major clients were Arita and Micron. So it was computer chips and potato chips. And I remember being on the floor in the studio with tweezers, rearranging the French fries to match the drawing that the art director had, and just looking out the window at the white puffy clouds outside and going, God, what have I done? So I drove to Sun Valley for the first weekend, and I saw the mountains so close out of the car window, and I was like, this is where I want to live, you know? And so I moved to Ketchum with $200 in my pocket, and a camera, but I had to get jobs at, I cocktailed at Sawtooth Club. I got a job at Jesse's as a waitress. I'm the worst waitress in the world. Sorry, everybody. And then I got a job teaching snowboarding, and basically would just take anything that came along, but kept on doing the photography because I loved it.
And you're still in Ketchum.
I'm still in
Ketchum. Love the Sun Valley area.
Yeah.
Yeah, Thea travels all over the world, but you call Ketchum comfortably your
world headquarters.
World headquarters. I love that. It's a beautiful place to be.
Yeah. It's a great community, too. Like, it's kind of got a bad rap because it's all very she-she and all that. But if anybody in the community needs help, we have a bake sale and make it happen.
Tell everyone you've got a studio or a gallery there also. How long have you had that, and how did that come about?
It's an 800 square foot studio, and it's in the basement. It used to be a racquetball court. It's down below Perry's.
You'd never know it. I've been there.
Yeah. It's hardwood floors from the racquetball court. And I made it pretty cool and groovy in there. And it's kind of a combination of it's a photo studio. I do have some paper backdrops that come down, but you got to choose between white, gray, or black. You know, I don't get all crazy with the colors. And then some lighting to do, you know, small headshots and stuff like that. And I've done some product in there. It also has a dark room. It's a place where I can get editing done. And at first I lived in a condo in Ketchum, you know, back in the 90s. And then just did everything on location. Like, that was my shtick. It was like, you know, travel on location. And then I bought there was a panic in the housing situation, and I managed to get a foothold in the real estate market down in Haley, and I bought the cheapest house in the Woodside, and it had a garage. So then I was like, ooh, yeah, I could have a photo studio, and I started doing studio shots for the magazines and all that. And then when I sold that and bought the condo, because I hated driving back and forth and I don't have kids or a husband, and then I had to pay extra. Then I really liked having the studio. So then a friend of mine, I used to share just the, it's in different segments, and I would share just the little closet and the dark room with a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. Where I let that go when I bought the house down in Haley, because then I had my own, I built my own dark room and used the studio. And then when I sold the house, all of a sudden the extra bigger room opened up from the racket studio. It's like these door, you know, three rooms all separated by doors. And then I shared that with him, but then he moved out, and then I shared it with another photographer, and then I was like in kind of a manic burst. I was like, I could do it on my own, you know, and that's when rent was $1,000 a month, and it actually just, it took my savings down to zero, but I didn't want to let it go because it does afford me, you know, being able to trade for different things. And then the rents ended up crashing, and then it ended up going down to $500 a month. So then, and now it's back up to 700, you know what I mean? But it like, the $1,000 a month was really killing me. But then, yeah. And so now it's my little space. And now when I rent out my house, Airbnb, I live there. And so it has multi functions.
It's evolved with you through the years. Then you've had it quite a while.
Yeah. And then my cards say, you know, photos do not bend, studio, but it's also photos do not bend, gallery and studio. And now it can be lounge too, because I've had parties in there and I, you know, host families in there and show them my book and stuff like that. So it can be anything.
So if we were to come there right now, if we're like, hey, Thea, we're going to come up and see you tomorrow. What's your gallery like at the moment?
It's always set up as like a gallery lounge. So if you wanted a studio shot, it would take me a half an hour to set it up as a studio, take the picture, and then I spend half an hour taking it down to take it back just to more of a gallery. I've got a magnetic wall all on one side, and I use that to play around and make my book because it's great. You don't need frames or anything, and, you know, it's just all these magnets, and I can play around with collages and collections, and I like the juxtaposition of images next to each other, so I can really play around and have some freedom.
I guess, and so tell
everyone a little bit. And there's also a stripper pole.
So your lounge can be very fun.
It can.
So tell.
I've had hip hop classes in there, and we've had photo seminars.
So it's not an all serious stuffy. When some people think of galleries, they think of very serious stuffy. You are.
Oh, no. We try to have like themed drinks, you know, and yeah. I don't take myself that seriously.
It's enjoy life, enjoy art, have fun.
Yeah.
So I guess share a little bit more your book's like. And I know this is your latest project, so maybe I'm jumping way ahead
of your
timeline. But your book is just fabulous, and I think it's very unique in how it's the content and also how it's physically your book is set up.
Yeah, I've been working on this for 5 years. I have an Apple TV, right? And then I've had 5 years of major operations. So I've had a lot of downtime, and I watch my Apple TV, and it accesses my Instagram feed. I have like 1,600 travel images, portfolio images on my Instagram feed.
Which is Thea Koenig.
It's instagram.com/Thea Koenig Travels.
Okay.
And then so randomly these images come up on my Apple TV, and I get ideas for the juxtaposition of images. So I've always wanted to do like pairs of squares. As a book, but it kind of lacked a cohesive theme because it has to be more than just pairs of squares, you know, otherwise it's just like another picture book. So, you know, while I was recovering from all these operations, I would, maybe a possible juxtaposition. Oh, like those images look cool together because they're from, you know, different catalogs and different trips and all that, and they're presented randomly. And then I would write them down as a note, you know, like a little tiny visual cue and a description so I would know which image it was. And then I just kept them in folders, and I had 5 years of folders of ideas. And then when COVID hit, we were all, you know, self-isolating. But I realized I got the real visceral feeling that we were self-isolating all together as a planet. And so then I came up with the name of the book is called Together. And then my chapters or themes, at first I just had, we are all cousins, and love your mother, like love your mother earth. And then I was kind of sharing the prototype with some people, and they were like, oh, you know what, just keep it simple. Just cousins, mother. And then I came up with together as the first chapter. And then family as the chapter about the interconnected web of causality. And so basically it's a book about how connected we all are. And it's the juxtaposition of the images. They're from seemingly different worlds, but your brain can't help make a correlation between the two. And it's a great exercise to just to keep making these correlations between different things. And you get a real sense of the deep connection between all things. And it's a lay flat book. It feels really good in your hand. It's 7x7, So it's not huge.
It's not a big, heavy book, but it's a thick.
But because it's a lay flat book, the seams are very deliberate. I've enlarged some of the photos just ever so slightly, so elements of one photo bleed into the other photo, but they're completely different. But that, you know, so it's very deliberate. And with the lay flat book, you can really see the seam where it connects.
Mm-hmm. So it's beautiful out on display.
Yeah. Once it's designed to like look through forward to back, read the preface, go through the series of images, you know, one by one, the first chapter together. I just get you used to the idea of seeing the images together, you know, and kind of trying to encourage you to think abstractly, and see that if you go outside the box, I'm kind of getting it now. And then cousins, you meet the cousins of the world, we're one human tribe. And then mother, some beautiful reminders of, you know, how amazing and magic Mother Earth can be. And then family, the interconnected web of causality. And then once you get the overall understanding of the forest, then you can just leave one page open in a book, and then that's like the meditation for the day. You know, and then the next day you can just flop over to another page, but you kind of understand the connection between the whole thing.
And the perspective that I have just from knowing you personally is when I see the photos and I hear you talk about it, so much of the last 20, 30 years of your travels and your work and your life is actually in there, in those photos. Like you say tribe, and I immediately go to, I know you've got some amazing stories and experiences with tribe, and I say that loosely, of people from all over the world. You've got amazing stories for Russia or for, all over.
Like it's my life's work. I've always wanted to make a picture book, and it took me until this long till I had, you know,
I was going to ask you that. Has this always kind of been like a dream or a goal to make a picture book? Or is it something new that came to you?
Well, I've always wanted, as a photographer, we always want to have our cave paintings, you know, to be left when we die. And so it's always like, you know, well, what will your book be like? I guess in the last 5 years, I've wanted to do a book, and I knew it was Pairs of Squares. But it really didn't kind of come together until COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are there any particular favorites in the book, if you were to open it up when you talk? Is it from cousins or?
I've got a couple favorite pages, just ones that really, you know, sing. And it's mostly portfolio shots, but there's a couple sleepers that have never seen the light of day, but they make great pairings with the other image. Mm-hmm. You know, there's one picture of, it was from 1986. I was in a helicopter in Hawaii, and we were coming back from like one of the famous canyons, and it's just sort of graphic of a sugarcane field with a little road on the top. And normally, it wouldn't be really a portfolio shot, but paired with that image of the drone shot of the kids playing ice hockey on the frozen lake there was a thing that was like a line in the ice that you could see, and it balanced so well visually with that other image, mm-hmm. that I brought it out of the drawer and put it together for the pair. And there were some great portfolio shots that didn't make the book because they didn't look good square or there wasn't a good pairing for it. And you know what? They'll be in the next book.
You mentioned that you had been exchange student in New Zealand back in high school, I guess. Has travel also been another one of your passions that you've enjoyed, or did that spark it for you? When did you really get the travel bug? Because you have been all over.
I had a passport since I was three.
My mom's
from England,
okay.
And she was a Pan Am stewardess, so I've heard all her stories and stuff like that. And I grew up in Stockton, which meant that I always wanted to be somewhere else. and I've always been a traveler. I always like going places I've never been before. That's like the exciting thing, to go somewhere that you've never been before. I remember for my fifth birthday, we lived in Stockton, which is like 2 hours from San Francisco. So I got a trip to San Francisco for my fifth birthday. And like the whole day was about me. We got to ride on a what do they call them? Trolley car. And we went to Japanese tea gardens. And I just remember that. And half the people in Stockton have never even been to San Francisco. And I got to go when I was 5 years old. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I remember always running home from school and reading National Geographic and just dreaming about that. My great aunt had this antique globe. I think it's from 1947. And I would always just like sit in the big chair next to it and spin it and just like pick a random spot. And just I've always wanted to go to every single place on that globe.
Mm-hmm. How has being a photographer allowed you to meet people in remote corners of the world? Yes.
Right? Like I ultimately want a great photo or to make a portrait of that person, but you can't just like, I'm not going to do it with a long
walk up to a stranger.
Yeah, well, or like a long, a telephoto lens from the other side of the street. That's
like paparazzi.
Yeah. I don't want everyone to take a picture if somebody doesn't want me to. So you have to build up a rapport. I mean, and there's many times I've built up a rapport with people and then the photo just didn't happen. And it's like, oh, well, I just met a cool stranger or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's like the fun of the game is to meet them, make them comfortable. And usually I'll say like, may I take a photograph just to remember the moment or something like that? Mm-hmm. And I think I don't judge, and I'm pretty much who I am. I mean, you know, if you meet me, I'm not putting on any airs or anything like that, and I wear my heart on my sleeve, and I think people read that, and then they give it back to me. I mean, I look at some of these portraits that I've taken, and then they're not, you know, I think only in America, they're like, oh, cheesy smile. You know, everybody else is just very open and presents themselves as they are. And I'm honored when they do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How do you approach people? Let's say.
Oh, it's all different. You got to just kind of wing it. I remember one time in Africa, I'm driving. I rented a pickup truck. They call them Buckies. And I'm driving around Lesotho, which is a landlocked country all within South Africa. And I'm driving along. And oh, my God, there is a dude with a jaunty hat set at an angle and a fabulous cape and a walking cane, and he's at a bus stop. And I passed him, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be so obvious. Oh, my God. Put it in reverse, you know, back up. Okay, I'm getting out of the car, grabbing my camera, and I don't really have time to develop a whole rapport because this is pretty obvious. And I just walked right up to him, and I'm like, can I have a photo? Just like, dude, you're fabulous, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, sure. You know, they love, mm-hmm. you know, and
you
they like being recognized, mm-hmm. yes. And it's a great shot, but, you know, some of them take a long time. Maybe I'll spend 3 days, you know, always going back and helping him in the field. And then upon leaving, I'll take a picture. But that dude was just like, reverse.
I feel like all your travel too, and all these stories and experiences led you to actually give a TED Talk. And what's the title of your TED Talk?
Travel Naked.
And what does that mean to you?
Metaphorically, of course. I remember when I gave the talk, it's like, oh man, there's going to be like five people disappointed that I'm not naked, and it's going to be the rest of the audience. This is going to be complete relief. But metaphorically, like when you travel and, you know, you don't have any constraints on schedules or attachments to comfort or... You can have a lot more of a visceral experience, and it's the direct experience. You really get to know who is doing the traveling, you know, when you don't have all your fridge of food and your closet full of clothes and all your friends and all your schedules and stuff like that. You can really just really have it's like a visceral experience, you know, the direct experience. And you get to know who is doing the traveling because, you know, do you want to eat now? Do you want to eat later? Do you want to eat that? Or do you want to eat that? You know, you really get to know yourself.
And you travel alone a lot.
Pretty much most.
in some ways, of course, there's always the safety issue, or people say women traveling alone. But I think it also maybe comforts, like people feel maybe you're more approachable, or when you're
and
alone.
It's easier for me to approach other people too.
Sure.
Because if I was with a friend, I would just always be like, chatting with a friend. There's no real need to go out and ask a stranger.
It more up to conversation.
Yeah.
That you're by yourself.
And I think I am more approachable for other people. Because they want to, who is the American traveling alone? Like, what is going on? Like, no other American woman is traveling alone.
You've been to Russia, India, some parts of the world that, especially at the time, Russia, I think that was, what, did you say early 90s?
Yeah, that was with a group, because you couldn't get into Russia alone.
True,
so I had to kind of do a group.
And then a few years ago, were you northern India?
Yes, in the northeast part of India, which is difficult to travel in, just because there's no, well, the public transportation is more like you need 11 people to fill up a little Isuzu Trooper rather than like
so you
a
just
bus.
Wait till there's 11 people that need to
yeah
go
and if
the
you
direction.
Want the window seat and it's taken, you just wait for the next one.
So
and my advice is don't get
way.
The back seat, because it's they've taken out the suspension, and any potholes you hit, your head will hit the roof. I taught everybody in that sumo some bad words. I couldn't help it.
So your TED Talk, Travel Naked, I know I saw it on YouTube. I'm not sure if you have it on your website or not.
Oh,
also.
It's out there on the internets. Just Google TEDx Sun Valley Travel Naked.
Mm-hmm.
Thea Koenig, you'll come up with it.
Yeah, you've got some great stories in there from traveling. Was that nerve-wracking to get up and do a TED Talk?
Oh my God, it was the scariest thing, but also
I feel like
the
you're always
thing.
Pushing like outside your comfort zone. Like, well, that's very admirable. Like,
I've always wanted to go to a TED Talk. Like, that was one of my bucket list things, and just the opportunity to give one came up before going to one, and it happened in November, and I wasn't doing, it was slack for Sun Valley, and so I had a month, basically. I took off a month to, because once I got accepted for it, we had a month. You know, they were kind of behind the deadline and all, and I had a month to come up with what I was going to say, memorize it, and perform it.
I want to say, in your TED Talk, you quote Ralph Waldo Emerson, "Become a transparent eyeball." And I think it's even like kind of on the screen behind you as you're talking. And when you just hear those few words at first, I was like, a transparent eyeball?
What is that girl talking
And then you
about?
Go on to say, you mean you should have an eye that is absorbent rather than reflective in order to see the world in its truest, most authentic form. And when you explain it that way, I don't know, it hit me like, yes.
Because we normally see things, I mean, it's what we see and what we interpret the world is more almost a reflection of us rather than the world. And I'm just saying, let it be the world, not your whatever imposing on it, you know?
Your background,
your glasses.
Experiences.
You don't want to have like your glasses on. You want to have no glasses on.
Where are you traveling to next?
I'm going to Mexico tomorrow. but this winter, I think I'm not going to get a ski pass because I'm always in ski jail, you know, when I spend that much on a ski pass up in Sun Valley. And Morocco's on the list. I actually want to get back to India because I have a 10-year return entry visa that's going to end up expiring in a couple years. But we'll see about the whole COVID thing. It might be the year to see Egypt. I've actually had a friend that just got back from Egypt, and there's nobody there now, and it's one of the few countries we're allowed to go to. So it might be time for that. I've always wanted to go to Jordan, Turkey.
The list is endless.
Yeah,
there's
and
so
maybe
many fabulous
well, there's
places.
Spain, Portugal. I mean, normally in the past, only India and maybe Thailand, all the super cheap countries, you know, because I've been living on a shoestring. And so only the really, really cheap countries have been offered to me, sort of. And I'd like to see some more expensive countries, you know, but there's plenty of interesting things to see. I mean, India, oh my God, I could, there's like all countries in the world, they're all different in their own little way. And then there's India. It's in a category by itself. It is crazy.
Unique.
There's like, I used to go to Burning Man a lot. And I don't go anymore. I just go to India because everybody's all dressed up and there's a festival and somebody every day is going to do something that like, wow, I never would have thought of that, you know?
How do you have photography as a business? Do you feel like you've had to hone on, well, of course, your personable skills, your personality, but you're also your own salesperson. You're kind of, you know, you've had to be an expert or a juggler of all these skills. And so you get out of school, you go up to Sun Valley, you've done this internship, you go up to Sun Valley. Is it just out meeting people, talking with people? How did people know you were there and this is what you can do for them?
You have to make money to pay the rent.
Right.
So I made some of the money using my camera, and that's what Brooks Institute of Photography taught me. They taught me how to make money using your camera.
So in that way, it's almost kind of a difference between a vocational education.
Yeah, it wasn't an art school.
Okay.
They didn't know what to do with me and all my infrared and all that sort of stuff. In fact, that was a little bit of a rebellious nature against the scientific background. And so when I first moved to Sun Valley, there was an article in the paper about me, and it was an article about like how people have to have lots of different jobs. And so it was kind of like split in the middle. One half was like a cocktail waitress and the other half was me holding the camera.
Hmm.
And you know what? I rode the chairlift, and me and my neighbor, we would ride the chairlift together and always jump on with tourists. And they would always, in an 8-minute chairlift, the question would always come, oh, so what do you ladies do in town? And she would say, she's a photographer. She's an awesome masseuse. Boom. And we'd both hand our cards out. So it really worked.
You made it happen.
Yeah. Guerrilla marketing. Just kind of
guerrilla marketing.
And then coffee houses will host your, photos for free. And then I would have, themed drinks one time for a jellyfish, a gallery opening. I had blue jello shots. And then just, if you're doing a gallery showing, you can do a press release in the paper, and just everything was on the shoestring budget.
So how has your photography evolved?
Like
what have been the different types of photography you've done over the years to lead you to?
Like business-wise or mm-hmm. personal? Okay.
I guess business,
when
yeah.
I first moved to town, I remember trying, because I studied architecture photography. There's really no wedding classes you take at Brooks and all that. Mm-hmm. But back in the day with film, it was difficult. You didn't know you were getting it on the back of the camera. Not everybody could be a wedding photographer, where now you just buy a digital camera and you just keep on shooting until the back looks good, and then you know you got it and you can move on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I remember the architecture didn't really happen, and then all of a sudden, well, there was a space for wedding photography, because I would do candid journalism, you know, and I did that maybe for about 10 or 15 years. And then during COVID, everything just shut down, and I pivoted back to architecture photography.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the best decision I had made, because the weddings ended up just being like beating a dead horse. There were enough people doing it now that digital happened, where it's a little bit more fashion-y or just not
it's
so
changed.
It's all about now the money, the stuff you spent money on, rather than the connections between people and the real life moments and stuff. I feel not a lot of people appreciated my style.
Okay.
So I do natural light now with architecture photography, and then I also pivoted towards fine art, which was, I always want to have my photos big and on gallery walls, and then that's been doing really well too.
Mm-hmm. And if you go out to your website, it's not just photos. There's also a lot of content. Have you always, and I say content, articles, have you always on your blog, have you always liked to write, or is that just evolved out of you wanting to share the story of the photos?
I've always been looking for a writer, because I really just want to get my photos out there, but mm-hmm. then sometimes it's like, oh, well, I guess I have to do the writing too. And then a lot of times my latest travels, I travel light, so I might not even have a journal with me. And so I actually used Facebook just as kind of like to jot thoughts down, you know, for the day or something like that. And everybody's like, oh my God, your words are like as good as your photos. And I'm like, oh, okay. and then I have my stories now on Maptia, which is like a user content website. And it's a great way just to be able to now have a convenient link to send somebody this story or like, here's all my stories and all that. So they're all on Maptia. You go to maptia.com/TheaKoenig and see all my stories.
And you recently just had kind of one of your stories, and I hate to even just say story because it's a longer, it's published in a magazine. And what?
That's my longest story. It's okay. Called Eat, Ski, Love. And 2019, I was recovering from my third hip replacement. Yeah, I only have two hips, but anyway. Yeah. and then so I couldn't get a season pass for that year, but my consolation prize was to get an Icon pass. And I have a Volkswagen Vanagon, and I plopped the cat in there and took off March, April, May. 5,000 miles and 3 months and an Icon pass, and I had the time of my life, and I wrote a story about it, and it got into Big Life magazine. Well, the shortened version, it's an excerpt. And I have fun reading it to people, because to test it out, I was always read it aloud to people and see how it flowed. And all that. And so I was so proud. It's like an 8-page spread of it's just my story and my photos, you know.
It's very flowing. Like it gets your attention because it's your experiences over a period of time.
But it's not chronological. You know what I mean? I pulled it together with themes and stuff like that. Like I talk about faith. I talk about, you know, and there's religious references. There's food references. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of made it... a little bit of a romp, a little bit of a inspiring, and a little bit deep.
Do you think you'll do more of those? Would you like to
do
more of that?
My next project is going to be called Masala, and it's going to be a mishmash of all my India stories.
Oh.
Get it? Masala?
Yes. Oh, that sounds delicious.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, what big projects do you have on the horizon? So that's one.
Yeah, and I'm making these adventure zines. So like when it came out in the magazine and it was an 8-page spread and all, but it was like definitely an abbreviated version. So before the magazine came out, I made my own magazine. It's like 70 pages. It's my long story. It's all my pictures. And I just kind of called it an adventure zine because it's like a magazine without the MAGA. Mm-hmm. And then that's volume one. And I'm so planning on doing, I don't know, however many volumes, but volume two is going to be Masala.
Creativity in your mind always going.
Oh, if I'm not hustling the chairlift to like pass out my cards, I want to get the chairlift alone because I'm actually writing stories and stuff in my mind. Or like on road trips, sometimes I'll even not play music. I'm kind of rehearsing this and how I want it. Yeah, I'm just writing it in my head.
I love that. I also love road trips, and my husband Randall and I, which you know, road trips are where we get most decisions made.
Yeah.
I think you're captivated, and you're not, even though the world's going by you on the side, you're very focused.
Yeah. And there's a relaxed about it. Like, because you have all the time in the world, really. I mean, it's going to be hours before you get to where you need to go.
Right.
And so you have time to think.
So I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
Being in a car and just driving, I don't know, maybe it's the forward propulsion too. You can.
I love the feet up on the dash.
Yes.
Not if you're driving them, but like a
passenger. That may be in our lifetime.
But you know, I'm okay with being alone. I think a lot of people aren't comfortable just being with themselves. You know, and I think it was the trip in Africa in 2003. I was there for 2.5 months, and I didn't really find another person to travel with. You know what I mean? Sometimes you hook up with people and sometimes you go do stuff together, but everybody else was in their 20s and I was in my 40s, and you know, I was kind of on my own program, and it was like, wow, that was 2.5 months all by myself. you know? And it's kind of like, well, okay, you got to be okay with it, you know? But now I almost like need that alone time, you know?
As that little girl getting that first camera or the college student, is this the life you envisioned? Did you have an expectation?
When I was younger, I did. I pictured myself married, very handsome husband. It was a ranchette. We had some horses, dogs, cats, and we also had like an out cabin, and that's where the manager of the property was going to live. And I was working for National Geographic, and none of those things happened. But I'm now that I've paid off my condo, I am looking forward to like being free and traveling and taking pictures, and I just want to share the pictures with the world and hopefully, you know, elevate the vibration. I don't know why people are so scared of people that look different than them, and I just want to like introduce different looking people, you know, to the world and have them be okay with it and appreciate Mother Earth, and just kind of inspire people, not necessarily to like follow me in my tracks, because then it would be too crowded wherever I went, but just to, you know, push the boundaries maybe and follow their bliss, or, you know, find whatever their bliss is and go for it. You might have to like work as a waitress or walk dogs, or you might have to do whatever you have to do, or shoot weddings and stuff like that. But even though I was shooting weddings and doing all those other things, I kept traveling. You know, I would save up money and save up miles. I can live like a queen in India for, I think in 6 weeks, I spent $1,500. And I lived in castles for $10 a night, and I took public transportation, and, you know, every now and again I treated myself. But you can do it for pretty on the budget, you know? Mm-hmm. And I kept on shooting because it was my love. Mm-hmm. And finally now, yes, I made a book, but I mean, I've never really made any money from those travel photos. Although now with the book, you can see these pages, and I do print them up very large now on metal or acrylic, and I'm starting to sell those in galleries. Mm-hmm. But until then, it's been 30 years of me just saving up money and doing it because I loved it, and shooting weddings to be able to pay for my travel photography, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, you're just talking about putting these prints on medals and that. So I feel like your photography art has evolved continuously.
Oh, I like know, because it used to be you had to print them in the darkroom. And that's tough. You can only make it, 16 by 20 or whatever. And I know it's great because you don't have to frame these things, you know.
But the technology has just leaps and bounds, too. Like you said, it used to be the dark room, and now digital, and now different kind of materials.
And it is weird, because when I first learned photography, it was, film, and it was this sort of, you capture it, and you have to wait. It's this delayed gratification, when you got the film back. And then they were precious. You made a duplicate of it, and it wasn't as good as the original. And now it's a different game. Now I'm almost capturing light as ones and zeros, and then I'm manipulating those ones and zeros and then outputting them as ones and zeros. And you don't need framing. Yeah, and these metal and acrylics, like, they look amazing, and mm-hmm. you can print them big. And now anybody can buy them, get them, mm-hmm. display them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's available to... anywhere from your phone to the wall to all different kind of materials, which I think gives a textural aspect to a photo too. In some ways, a photo is kind of flat depending upon the content.
Yeah, and like some images look good on acrylic, and then this latest project of mine, which is taking abstract pictures of rust on like rusty cars, and then making collages and panels out of them. Those are going to be on flat metal or brushed metal. You know what I mean? So it kind of mm-hmm. matches the medium. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I could keep going on and on. I have so many questions for you, but I think we're going to get to the end, but I'm going to do this Proust questionnaire. So I'm going to ask you 10 questions, no discussion. You're just going to fire off the first thing that comes into your mind.
Okay.
We're going to see where you take us. All right. You ready?
Yeah.
What is your idea of perfect happiness?
In the moment, open and no conflict.
When and where were you the happiest?
I love swimming in warm water and traveling. Like I'm when I start traveling, even if I'm not comfortable or this and that, it's like, oh, I'm back to my real self.
Which living person do you admire the most?
Malala, and I'm not sure of her last name. She's 15-year-old. She won the Nobel Peace Prize.
The Afghani girl.
Yeah. What, her heart is full of love. I mean, she had some bad juju come her way, and there's no malice towards her attackers or anything like that. Mm-hmm. She's a true example.
What is your latest extravagance?
I just bought a cashmere throw at the Seattle airport yesterday. But I've already worn it, so it's okay.
Which talent would you most like to have?
I wish I could sing.
What do you consider your greatest achievement?
I think so far my book, Together.
What's your greatest regret?
There was Chris Rainier was a photographer that I admired, and I had the offer to go help him in Rwanda on a photo project, but I couldn't leave my shitty waitress job or my snowboarding instructing job because then I wouldn't have been able to afford the apartment in Sun Valley, and it just would have been too hard to live, and so I turned it down, and that's my biggest regret.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Oh, to attempt. Well, I mean, I've been a river raft guide and a snowboarding instructor. I've sold seafood for Blackie's Seafood. I've been a lifeguard. You know, I've done lots of stuff. But, like, in the future, I always dreamed of, like, doing landscaped architect, but I don't. You know, I don't like working on computers that much. I always wanted to be a rock star, but, you know, the singing thing.
What profession would you not want to attempt?
Own a restaurant.
And lastly, what's your motto?
I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
Love it. And I think you've definitely been having a good time.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for being here and sharing. I feel like I could have you on again and again to dive deeper into, like, each country and the great stories. But they are found. Tell everyone where they can read more and see more of your photos, because I think they'll all enjoy it a lot.
Thanks. You can see my website at theakoenig.com. And my Instagram feed is instagram.com/theakoenigtravels. And my stories are on maptia.com/Theo Koenig. And you can go look. There's a preview. The digital book is available. And, you know, if you go there, you can see the preview. You won't be able to see all the photos. You'll have to buy the digital version to see all of them. But you can go to tinyurl.com/buy together.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have wonderful travels tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Numbers and Tech Podcast. Future episodes will include chats with other amazing entrepreneurs. Let's keep the conversations going, whether you are running the show or working on your side hustle. We give you the business advice you need. If you learned something new or felt inspired, let me know. If you want more tips and great information, follow my Instagram account, Numbers and Tech, or email info@numbersandtech.com. Always remember to grab life by the bottom line.